Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hello, this is Anne Revelle-Petcher back again in the studios in Wake Forest with Carolina Connections and our producer, Reed Powell. Hello, Reed.
Hey, Anne, how are you?
Great. We have a good show today, do you think?
I am so looking forward to this show. I can't even tell you how excited I am.
I know, so next week will be our third month anniversary of Carolina Connections.
Wow.
I know, right? Already?
That's great. Time flies.
And we've had amazingly brilliant people in the studio so far. We've had a lot of really strong leadership demonstrated, and we've really gotten a good view of what's going on in our state. But we got two people in the studio today that are among the most brilliant people I've ever met, that are doing some of the most good in, you know, people in North Carolina don't even know these guys. So it's time that you guys get a pedestal. I am thrilled to have in the studio Phil Williams. Phil, welcome to the studio.
Oh, thank you very much, Anne. Glad to be here.
Phil is, he has his own consulting firm wherein he collaborates with a lot of people to work in the design and development for a broad range of defense and industrial commercializations. So a lot of the back end of things you use every day came from Phil's brain initially.
Well, that's maybe a little bit overstated, but thank you very much for that.
And we also have Jerry Hayes, who's the founder of the Wireless Research Center and owner of a lot of different patents.
Inventor of, not
inventor
owner.
Of, okay, oh, darn. Yeah, it would be nice if you owned them all, huh?
Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Jerry. So glad to have really two really, really bright people in the studio today who are going to talk to us a little bit about what happens at the back end of development of new technologies and products and why it's so important and how do you make sure that they're going to work. So, Phil, tell us a little bit about, just at a very high level, the kind of work that you do in your consulting practice.
Thank you, Anne, and I'll try to keep this brief. Conceptually, you have individuals like Jerry. Jerry's a very brilliant guy in terms of his past and the kinds of products he rolls out or his designs. There's usually someone like myself, usually a team like myself that's teamed up with a guy like Jerry in the hardware and software design validation. So validating the design and moving it in through into manufacturing and trying to accelerate the rollout so that it the life cycle assurance and product quality is all there. Mm-hmm. So from I would define it as automated test equipment, hardware design validation, software design validation, following either an agile process, an agile design, agile development process, or a waterfall process, whereby there are teams working, listening to the requirements, looking at the market requirements, looking at all the global standards that are required. Mm-hmm. For instance, like an aircraft has FAA standards.
Okay.
And they also have FCC standards.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then the telephony world, you have all kinds of communication standards, and you have your European standards. So just go standards just down the list. Mm-hmm. Military has that as well. So understanding those standards as it relates to the intended use and the market segment, and then extrapolating that into architectures that can emulate or simulate or create the environment that allows the designer to take his black box or widget and have it interfaced into kind of a true-to-life environment to validate the design. So I'll refer to that as hardware and software design validation through high-volume manufacturing and lifecycle support.
Wow. Actually, Jerry, we've talked recently about some of those same standards as they apply to radio frequencies in mobile devices in the medical industry.
That's right. That's right. And what Phil brings to the table, too, is taking it from the design up through the industrialization. And when you build a product, it's really a talent to be able to meet the requirements and the expectations of the consumer as well as the regulatory aspects.
So essentially what you guys are looking at is you take someone else's idea. Is that correct?
Well, we'll typically collaborate with someone. In some cases, it might be Jerry's idea. Or we may have an idea, but typically we're working in partnership or in teams or in a collaborative environment.
And give us an example of what some outcomes might be, just so people can understand what kind of back end things we're talking about.
If I may, I'll give two totally different scenarios.
Sure.
In one of the programs, is a ties in cloud computing,
okay,
virtual machines,
okay,
all the way down to a global architecture, where that architecture would be deployed. This falls into a government arena,
okay,
where there would be maybe 100 locations around the world where at that location it would have new hardware architecture and it's talking to the cloud. Well, as an example, that was like 54,000 hours of software development.
And wow.
An amazing amount of security and compliance requirements, following an agile hybrid process, if you will. An enormous amount of testing. You couldn't imagine the amount of testing and validation, bug tracking. And over a year and a half of, you know, of course, programs can take longer or shorter.
Sure.
But a very large team of different skill sets, knowledgeable in these various categories and requirements. And then there's an iteration of testing that might be a user acceptance test,
mm-hmm,
then maybe a pilot test,
okay,
and then a plan for go live. And of course, you don't want any bugs.
Right.
You want nothing to fail. And if you do your job well enough in advance, you launch well. Now, the other one would be more of a hardware architecture where I think I was talking to you earlier about in the automotive sector. Today, our vehicles have become what I might call a voice browser on wheels. It's an entertainment center.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't that way back in the pre-90s. We all remember the big brick phones that we had.
And the big bag phones.
Big bag.
Yeah. The luggable phone.
That's right.
So in the vehicle today, the radio is really an intelligent box. It's become a kind of, in some cars, a brain. And within the vehicle itself, the vehicle has a communications architecture. Some have an optical bus. Some have an electrical communications bus.
What's an optical bus?
Well, how it communicates. Like we're talking through the air,
sure,
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have in the vehicle, when you have video,
mm-hmm,
it takes up a lot of bandwidth. So you have to push it through a fast medium,
okay,
like fiber. So I meant like a fiber optic communications bus.
Okay.
Some have a twisted pair wire bus. Some have used wireless. But you have more data with games and video in the vehicle. You still have all the challenges of being fast and not losing signal.
Right.
So there's hardware that's being developed years in advance of that car. And it has to be validated and tested. The software and hardware at differing levels. So that's kind of a hardware architecture and software, whereas the other is more of a cloud concept.
So you're creating technology right now that is going to be used in, for example, a vehicle that might come out 10 years from now or 5 years from now.
Well, usually three to five years. Three to 5 years. And the architectures that typically the teams I've worked with and I've had started two companies that I've sold over the years. And we've all work has focused in the development of systems that were very complex,
mm-hmm,
but with disruption of technology in mind, shrinking the size of the hardware, adding more features that were never available into that form factor, so that that designer or that manufacturer can now do something that they could never do before.
Okay.
Not only in the U.S., but as you go into a foreign country like China or Malaysia, typically they start small with a small licensee,
mm-hmm,
and scale up.
Okay.
But you want to ultimately be able to do the large scale programs. So it's a scalable, flexible architecture that's common across all members of the community, so that if they are designing a product in China and they're working with someone in the U.S., they get the exact same results. They're not using difference. There's no difference.
If only that could apply to everything. I just, mm-hmm, got a new phone this week, and it has a different charger than I'm used to, and it's the same manufacturer. And I'm like, can't we all get on the same team here, guys? So how do you work on these things early on, but you, and I'm going to come back to the car thing because everybody can relate to a car. You're designing these things 3 to 5 years out. How do you know they're actually going to work when they get inside that car that has yet to be designed?
Trust me, the automotive manufacturer does a really, really good job on testing. For instance, what a lot of people wouldn't realize would be that, and there are various acronyms, I'll toss out a few, but in terms of hardware design validation or endurance testing or failure analysis testing, environmental testing, vibration testing. These are all done in the, and Jerry's shaking his head there. He's been down that path. That's all done in the design and validation phases before it even gets into manufacturing. And so that product, that concept has been validated in numerous ways, hardware and software.
Give us an example. You had talked to me earlier today about creating a device that had, I don't know, 6, 12 radios in it or something like that, and you were doing testing that required a temperature differentiation.
Well, I'll try to clarify that just a bit more.
Please.
If we take...
You live in a complicated world.
And Jerry, I'll ask Jerry to... Jerry, please interrupt me along the way. And sure. Jerry knows this world very well. Let's take the example of a military aircraft.
Okay.
And you take the example of an automotive vehicle.
Now, don't say anything that you would have to kill me if I heard it.
I'm a harmless guy. Each of those vehicles, one's an air vehicle, military, and one's a consumer car. In all cases, the contract manufacturer, the owner, the manufacturer of the vehicle is always concerned with performance and testing.
Right.
And they're already aware of many standards they have to comply with. So how do you test, how do you, if you watch the TV commercials, you'll see the Mercedes-Benz crashing into a wall, right? Well, they also have the electronics in that vehicle, circuit boards and black boxes, many of them that are placed into something called an environmental stress chamber. Mm-hmm. And that chamber looks like a very big double-wide refrigerator, freezer. It's not that, but it has the ability to, in seconds, pull the temperature down to like minus 60 degrees centigrade and then immediately ramp it back up to like plus 100 degrees centigrade.
Oh.
So the temperature cycles over a block of time with a number of representative prototypes in that chamber would work toward a so-called 100,000-mile car life cycle.
Yeah, those are accelerated life testing. Right.
Okay, so essentially by changing temperature dramatically, you can sort of do an accelerated life test?
That's right. You could put it under a dynamic stress. In addition to temperature, you could do humidity and salt and other different sprays, types of things.
And Jerry's right. And Jerry, keep going. It's the full life cycle what a vehicle might.
Yep, you're trying to simulate what a vehicle would do in its lifetime, and you want to do it in a much shorter period so that you can analyze it and see where potentials for failure occur. You know, you want to minimize those failures before it reaches a product stage. And it's done on all of the subsystems components.
So are all the subsystems and components tested separately and then all put together, or are they tested all together? How's it work?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. 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 A lot of times they're tested separately first,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So you have different experts in different areas, and they'll test their device fully, and you know someone else in another coworker that's doing a different technology would test theirs. And then when you integrate it, you do the integrated life testing as well.
Right. I think a good example of that would be, I think most everyone's familiar with aircraft simulations, like
the
777 and the new Airbus vehicle. So much of that vehicle, be it electronic or materials, have all been tested in its own state, as a circuit board or a piece of material.
Not Washington.
Well, they
could be tested in Washington State if Boeing had left their headquarters there,
right?
It
wasn't necessarily meaning geographical state, but every component is tested so that when it comes together, I mean, you wouldn't want to get on an airplane where the devices weren't being tested until it came together.
Right.
So clearly, as Jerry pointed out, if it's a military item or air ground vehicle, there are known standards that it must comply to, for which the design team or the contract team knows in advance, and they have tools set for that. The cost of that test is dramatic.
Is it?
And the time to produce that test is dramatic. The software needed to develop the scripts, the emulation, how do you even know how that vehicle is going to operate? So you have a lot of work to do.
That's interesting. It kind of explains, I think there was a few years back when I think it was Lockheed Martin, but I can't remember. Somebody was getting called on the carpet in front of Congress because they were so late in delivering a particular new plane for the defense industry.
And many people don't realize how many components, you know, very small components. Anytime you want to make a change, you know, to a design, has to be validated and proven.
That's correct.
Because the risks are so great, right? I mean, you look at the space shuttles that we've lost. Yeah.
And Jerry points to some of the process issues, change management, to make even a small change of be it a screw or a piece of software, in some cases, a full suite of scans and other security tests have to go about that may take a fairly large block of time.
I see.
So you can be thankful that there are teams and standards in place to ensure liability and safety.
Hmm.
But it can get out of control.
Yeah.
You know, when you're looking 3 to 5 years out, you're engaging emerging technologies now. You know,
it's
always a balance. Will they be ready in 3 years or 5 years?
And that's why Jerry and what he does here is such an enabler. From an enabler of technology, Jerry, and you know, if you don't mind me commenting, Jerry, the tool set that he has here, the anechoic chambers, and the wealth of experience for any company pursuing work in the wireless spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry's team has both the domain knowledge and the very expensive capital equipment needed to perform that testing and to interpret it. That's a huge enabler.
Yeah.
As a 501c3, the Wireless Center, it's a public asset. So that equipment and the resources are available for people such as Phil to wrap a new business around and to go after those 3 to 5 year markets.
Which is one reason I'm here today to see Jerry.
we're working on multiple collaborative teams across the state. One thing, Phil's pretty humble about his experience as well, but being part of the North Carolina Defense Business Association, he chairs the Science and Technology Committee for that. And what that does is that really brings together the assets across the state to try to compete nationally.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of government programs. We have a lot of talent here, and trying to get that talent to be cooperative and collaborative and break the silos down. That's one of the things that he does very well.
Jerry, of course, Jerry's an easy guy to work with. And, you know, you look around the room and you look around North Carolina, and I should footnote that in my career, and I'm not a young guy, I'm not an old guy, but I've traveled about 40 countries in technology development. And most of the work I did was not in North Carolina. Mm. It was in my earlier career, but most of it was outside the U.S. or on the West Coast or in the Boston area. And I had witnessed so many government contracts not coming to North Carolina.
Mm.
But North Carolina and the university system and the resources we had all the enablers, but the collaborative spirit wasn't always where it needed to be for the win. And so, as Jerry pointed to the North Carolina Defense Business Association, it's a 501c3, as Jerry pointed out. It's based in Fayetteville. I became involved, I think, in the late 2009, 2008, and been on the board since 2010. And in about 2011, I asked our board, could I spin out a science and technology committee? Because mm-hmm. we're right in Research Triangle Park.
Right.
You got Special Operations Command at Fort Bragg, got Joint Special Operations there, have the Marine Corps MEF units and the Science Technology Group there. We have Army Research located right here in our backyard. We've got a wealth of technology, and so in 3 years, we have a meeting this Thursday. We have 42, we started off with 8 members back about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have 42, and these are basically members of our organization and invited guests, and several of the members now have teamed and won contracts.
Excellent.
Fairly large. And I'd say for our 2014-2015 year, as Jerry pointed out, Jerry being in his resource, the Wireless Research Center, is a great enabler for many North Carolina companies that are focused on wearable electronics, for instance.
Right.
Or next generation communications, wireless mesh networks. Anything that's carrying a signal through the air in a wireless fashion, Jerry and his team would be an enabler. So there, many of us monitor the opportunities coming out of government, and our little science and technology committee now, we're forming teams. We have some members have non-disclosures in place and some have done business together, whereas before we didn't know each other.
Yeah, we keep, you know, down as you know, we have a studio in Wilmington as well, and we're hearing a lot about interesting things coming out of Wilmington. They're creating new spaces just for R&D for new products for the armed forces all the time, coming up with all sorts of things. So,
and they're connected well, like Jim Roberts down in CIA.
Down at CIA, yeah.
Down there, it's a really neat network in North Carolina. We're
I'm glad
fortunate.
To hear that it's connecting well, because there's obviously great stuff in Asheville, sorry. And
it takes a while to build those connections. And if I speak on that, about 2 weeks ago, I got a call out of the blue, someone who had heard about our Science and Technology Committee, and he was basically an investor group, and was asking what were some of the fundamentals that we think about in our Science and Technology Committee. Well, I'd say fundamentally, we look toward building a culture of trust. Trust is very important.
Absolutely.
Now, not everyone has to share anything, but there are those that can share openly, those that may share under non-disclosure, but define it as emotional trust and rational trust. And the more frequency and duration that people have a chance to have quality of discussions together, they build their own trust or connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And that then is a launch pad for them working together.
Right.
So,
what kind of things do you think that we can do to help facilitate that even further, that level of trust and the level of cooperation across the state?
There's some proofs or lessons learned where we've had individuals like Jerry. I think Jerry is one who's enjoyed some opportunities to come out of this. And of course, Jerry is reciprocal. He hears about opportunities that may not be a fit for him, and he'll contact someone he knows within our S&T group. So the reciprocity is, I think, important. Not being always a taker, but being a giver.
Right.
That balance. Sometimes you can't give. Jerry, what are your thoughts on that?
Having that network, right, of knowing, you know, that's not my forte, but that might be theirs, you know, or sending them over to Phil or to someone else to work on the project. Right? That's the nature of collaboration. You know, it's just being able to give and take.
I think the give and take, the willingness to give and take, and maybe to help someone, you know, you do outreach and you help, and it comes back. And that's, if I might speak briefly, Jerry and I both had the chance back in November to meet Lieutenant General Joe Anderson, Commanding General 18th Airborne Headquarters, and Fort Bragg Commanding Base Commander. I think he's in Afghanistan now, number two guy, but a very Joe, wouldn't you say a very impactful
Yes,
fella?
Definitely. Yeah, and for the community as well, right? I mean, that was one of the reasons we went there, was his outreach to the community and to the movers and shakers of the area.
In what way was he reaching out to the community?
Well, I'd say he sponsored a program called Leadership Fort Bragg.
Oh.
Leadership Fort Bragg. I think Jerry and I were one of the first to participate in his Leadership Fort Bragg. And we spent a whole day there. We had a chance to hear from his comments at the beginning and at the end. During the course, we got a chance to sit in a couple of Black Hawks and some of the Humvee simulators to feel what it's like to be in the same state where our warfighters are.
So how does that impact a designer?
Well, I'll tell you very clearly, I got nauseous in the simulator.
it really makes it very real.
Very real.
You understand it more than just a simulation or you know, an idea on a piece of paper. You know,
so when you think about a young fella in a tank, he just can't see out. He has to be able to look out. Three-dimensional night vision is a real challenge.
Mm.
And so a lot of these guys get night vision and have problems with night and can be nauseous, and vehicles roll over. Many deaths occur because the tank or the Humvee's rolled over and the guys can't get out and it goes down a ravine. Rollovers are, how do you prevent that? So going back to Lieutenant General Joe Anderson, I think Jerry and I both found him very impactful. He spoke a couple times here in Raleigh, and he was seeking the community to offer any support for his warfighters and family, be it jobs when they exit or a sense of community. Also, in our membership with the sequestration and the budget funding cuts, it really doesn't help our military when they don't have what they need for strategic needs. So from that perspective, he's someone very compassionate and very focused on his warfighters and their health and their family, which I think is he moved me dramatically.
And it's invaluable to hear their opinion, you know, as the one out in the field putting themselves in danger,
right?
You know, letting us know this design needs to be improved. It would be nice if you could do X, you know, and that's where having an S&T committee, you put a problem in front of a bunch of engineers and they're already solving it.
Right.
So you know. If you take Jerry, Jerry's quite inventive in that nature. So as he and I are talking about science and technology, we're not excluding health and medical.
Right.
Body on a chip, magneto-optical brain sensors, non-contact, all type of non-invasive sensing. You have military weapons, of course, but you have everything that ties into supporting the therapy needed, the detection therapy of mild traumatic brain injury, TBI, and with Duke University and UNC, there are a lot of university research going on. And in some cases, they're focused so much on their research, they do not have a way to introduce their technology into the market.
Right.
And so members of our Science and Technology Committee, we're focused on how can we solve problems. Some of us are in basic research. Some are in research, development, test, and evaluation. I fall more in the R&D, T&E.
Right.
I'm not a basic researcher. But I can normally see some technology and know how to apply it.
And it sounds like you've started to develop a real solid feedback loop among the actual users.
Right. We have a very efficient closed loop and feedback loop among segments. And we invite them in as speakers to meet and to give us briefings to share what they can. They can't share everything, but it's building that dialogue and that relationship. The trust. You got to have the trust. You got to have the reason.
And we have the researchers on the other side coming in from the different universities, from NC State at the Assist Center, or from ECU or from Duke, where they're presenting their research, and they're in a room full of people that can make it a product, you know, can make that happen.
Just as an example, I got a phone call on Friday to meet someone in Washington, D.C., so I drove up yesterday and drove back. But what they had was something that ties in very well to Admiral McRaven's Talos program. Talos, and Jerry and I have talked about this in great depth.
It's next-generation body armor.
It's body armor. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Interesting. And it's called Talos?
Talos. It's like tactical assault gear for the special operations guys.
Okay.
But effectively, some might describe it as a non-flying Robert Downey Jr.
I was just going to say, I'm thinking Iron Man here.
But when you think about the aspects of that, right, all of those capabilities can be done here in North Carolina.
Why didn't you make him fly? Yeah. Come on.
Well,
we're working on that.
But we can't tell you.
Okay, that's one of those you'd have to shoot me things, huh?
What Jerry brings to the table, if you look at some of the goals they have of that, it's got to communicate.
Yeah.
It's got to communicate a lot of data.
It's all wireless,
you know,
right?
Yeah. Right.
For me, I'll simplify this. It's either a manned, Talos is a manned or unmanned vehicle.
Oh, right.
It's
sure.
just a vehicle.
Yeah.
That communicates. So it has embedded architecture. It would have all kinds of neat technology.
Biometric sensors. In addition to the armor, right? Yeah. The comms and the jamming capabilities.
Which speaks right to Jerry's background. I mean, Jerry and his team here, the unique assets they have, it's truly a blessing for the state of North Carolina. It's a blessing for our university system.
Mm-hmm.
But who doesn't know that he's here?
Well, we're working on that too.
Yeah, we are
right?
working on that. That's right.
the equipment he has is unique across the U.S.
Right.
It's not just unique in North Carolina.
Well, it sounds to me like North Carolina's really got a lot of great stories to tell about how we're doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work. I mean, we're getting a little bit more air coverage. I heard us on NPR today as the leaders in beer now. Everybody's moving beer to North Carolina from all over the country. We need to also get the word out, obviously, about the intelligence and the design and the connections that we have here. And I really want to thank the two of you for being on the show and sharing some of that sort of back-end insight.
Well, thanks for having us, Ann.
Well, guys, we're about very quick. Thank you very much, Ann. And Jerry, always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks so very much. And until next time, this is Ann Revelle-Petcher signing off for Carolina Connections.